Hello, and welcome. In 1997, Gary Oldman wrote and directed a semi-autobiographical film called Know By Mouth, starring Ray Winstone playing the character of Ray, and Kathy Burke playing the role of Val. In the film, it focuses on their toxic relationship and the effects this dynamic has on them and on their extended family. And it's a story of abuse, codependence, and love, expressed in all the wrong ways, played out through a generational cycle of violence and poverty in South London. Some films, they play out like horror movies. This is one of them. Except the characters aren't being chased through the woods by a psycho in a hockey mask. They're trapped with no escape, and the monster is within. Gary Oldman, he dedicated this film to his father, and in the character of Ray, he probes deeply into the psychology of a man wrestling with demons from the past, wrestling with alcoholism and deep-seated trauma. And every character is wounded, hurting, yet held together in a vicious cycle of codependence. And there is no happy ending. Nothing is resolved. No lessons are learned. Gary Oldman, he stated the film was a love letter to his father. Gary said that after his father passed away, he drank for 25 years in order to deal with the loss, wrestling with unresolved pain and anger. And he said that the movie was a way of resolving a lot of that in order to finally forgive his father. In some movies, they hit you like a sledgehammer. This is one of them. And the character of Ray in the movie, he's not depicted as a monster. He commits monstrous acts, but he's presented as human. There's a vulnerability in Ray, and a deep-seated sense of shame and guilt that hangs on him. And you can see his humanity, even in his most violent moments. There's a lost, childlike quality to him. But his violent rages, they're explosive. And Val's younger brother is Billy. Billy is a drug addict. Now, at the start of the film, he's living with Val and Ray, and Ray uses him for his criminal dealings. And Billy is often the target for Ray's violence. But Billy, he's a good soul, but he's a lost young man. He's beaten down. He's a slave to his addiction. And he's the kind of young man that will bounce between jail and the streets. In jail and on the street, he'd be taken advantage of. He'll be shunned by most and victimized by predators. That's the same story for many young men who grow up in these environments. That's a cycle. He'll either get clean, or he'll die a premature death, one or the other. And in prison, he'll be fed drugs and he'll be exploited. The same story on the streets. Once they get their hooks into a young man like Billy, they won't let go until they strip the bones clean. One night, Billy steals Ray's stash of drugs, and he sparks up to get his fix. Ray discovers this, and then he confronts Billy. This is the scene that ensues.
Get that cunt out of my fucking Now, you can see the dynamics at play here. How Val places blame onto her brother Billy, even though he is a victim of the violence. And how the concern is over the fact he will now require medical attention, rather than on the violence itself. And Billy, he's the kicking boy in this household. He's often the target of the violence, but now that he's been evicted, there's no protective barrier between Val and Ray. After this attack, Billy is left essentially homeless, and left to do his best to survive on the streets. And Janet, she's the mother to Val and Billy, and she's the only one with a full-time job, and she often helps Billy, at the same time enabling his drug habit, driving him to spots to score drugs and letting him shoot up in a car. Intergenerational abuse, or the cycle of violence, it's often portrayed almost like an STD, something that's just passed on from one generation to the next by osmosis. The common belief being that if a male has been the victim of sexual or physical abuse, that he will in turn offend. But there's a myriad of factors and protective barriers that prevent that cycle from occurring. There's risk factors, yes, but there's also protective factors. Social and familial support structures, community, physiological and psychological predispositions, and so on, all which determine whether that child will likely offend. The character of Ray, he's the single most accurate representation of an abuser I've ever seen. His portrayal, it displays a deep level of vulnerability and shame. He acts out almost compulsively, his physiology and mind are in overdrive. He lashes out as if driven by forces deep inside that he can't keep at bay. And his alcoholism, his violence and other impulsive behaviours, they're in stark contrast to the lovable, tender side we witness when he interacts with his daughter or when he interacts with his friends and Val at different times. And it's like he's stuck. He's lost in time. He's still that young child he once was, unsafe, unsure, hypervigilant and ready to lash out, if not at others, then at himself. An abusive, violent behavior directed against children or directed at a spouse, that it often stems from vulnerability. Often as a result from early exposure to violent behaviors, without any other protective factors to mitigate or deter. And those vulnerabilities, they often lead to mental illnesses, such as long-term depression, and also to substance abuse as a means to cope. And it's those coping mechanisms that child employs to survive that early abuse that come to take the place of any actual identity. The children, they adopt and incorporate traits of parents. And the child, it identifies with those dominant characteristics or traits. For example, if the parent battles with depression, or is violent, or is an alcoholic, the child then incorporates and models those traits and behaviors, and they then become the base of their identity. And those are then the roots from which all other behaviors and relationships develop. And if that soil is toxic, so is everything else above the surface. And those mechanisms that a child uses to numb themselves and to self-soothe, like drugs, alcohol, self-harming, in an effort to escape an abusive environment, those then become maladaptive behaviors in the adult. We see Ray abusing alcohol, punching himself in the face, destroying his apartment in a violent rage. He punishes himself just as much as he hurts others. And statistically, I mean, you could flip a coin, heads or tails, as to whether a boy who comes from an abusive home will see the inside of a jail cell. Drug offences, they're almost a given. But often, these men, they're just running on autopilot, unaware of what precipitated a violent episode, or what drives them to self-medicate or self-harm. And a child can stay stuck. The trauma they witness or experience in the family home will stunt them emotionally and psychologically. There is no stability. They never know where they stand or when a parent is going to lash out. So it's impossible to foster a sense of trust in their parents and with other people. And so that abusive behavior, it's normalized. It's accepted. So that's the template for all future relationships that child has. And those later relationships are defined by a deep sense of mistrust, insecurity, jealousy, and a constant cycle of acting out, of self-loathing, shame, and a desperate need for acceptance. So, it's a roller coaster ride of extreme emotions and mood swings. That child will become a trapped adult. They won't evolve. They remain a slave to their physiology and to their past. In this next scene, Ray confronts Val over what he construes as evidence that Val is having an affair, when in reality she was simply at the pub with mutual friends and family, playing pool.
What's the matter? Ray? Ray? What's going on?
What?
What's going on?
What are you on about?
Who's the cunt he was playing pool with?
Who?
The cunt he was playing pool with.
Well, it's Peter.
Peter Murray.
Peter? Peter Murray. Who's Peter Murray?
Oh, he's a mate of Gus and Paula's.
When did you meet him?
What's the problem with this?
When'd you meet him?
Ray, I don't know.
When'd you fucking meet him? I ain't gonna fucking ask you.
Meet him? I just know him. He's the mate of Gus and Paula's. I've seen him a couple of times when I've been there.
How many fucking times have you seen this Peter then? I mean, what are you fucking rumping him?
Oh, don't be stupid. Look,
are you fucking him? Because you're looking a little bit fucking friendly to me. But fucking tell me fucking straight. Are you fucking him?
Oh, I can't be doing this.
Hey, don't fucking walk away from me. Come here.
Eat a cigarette.
Fuck the fake. I'm going to fake. Have a fucking fake. Come here now, cunt. Come here. Why are you going round now? You fucking him? That Angus, did he fit you up with one of his little mates, a cunt? Did he? Cunt?
No, I'll go round there, right, because I can't stand this. Right? I can't stand you.
So it's true then, is it?
What's true?
He just said you can't fucking stand me.
No, I mean this. I can't stand this all the time.
What? Fucking what?
No,
fucking
what? Me
fucking what?
No.
What?
Violence in the family home is cyclic. We've all seen couples who engage in this. One moment they're at each other's throats, the next they're making up, then they're abusing each other again. You try to get in between that by playing rescuer, and you will be construed as the threat, as the one attempting to destroy their relationship. Because for them, the abuse is love. And the blame will never be placed on the abuser. No, it was the alcohol that made him do it. No, I disappointed him. No, he just had a bad day. And all of this, it stems from the template they experienced as a child. There is no quick fix, as we're dealing with a lifetime of maladaptive behaviors, of coping mechanisms, family dynamics, and ingrained beliefs. So the patterns, they become familiar. And for the child, this repeated exposure to trauma can result in severe psychological and behavioral dysregulation. I mean, you could put a stethoscope to the chest of a child living in this environment, and even when resting, their heartbeat would be far more rapid than that of the average child, and that carries through to adulthood. And the child in these homes, they can, in effect, become the caregiver for their parents, where this process of parentification or spousification, especially in regards to boys, is often the norm. Now, the child then assumes the role of adult in the home, cleaning up after and supporting their caregiver, as everyday life is simply too overwhelming for the parent. So for the child, anxiety, depression, substance abuse, hyperaggression, and often severely impaired cognitive and social functioning are the natural end result. So you can see how a woman could then follow this pattern of being the caregiver in her later adult relationships, and how both partners can end up acting out violently. Now, men and women who experience these early traumas naturally gravitate to one another. But there is an ebb and flow here, and that's really discussed in relation to domestic violence. The narrative is typically that the woman is the victim and the man is the perpetrator, but the dynamic is far more complex. Now, statistics show that intimate partner violence is essentially equal in relation to the sex of the perpetrator, and that women are far more likely to use weapons in these situations. And there's a reason for this. If you loved me, you would hit me. Because often, for these people raised in these environments, abuse is construed as love. And if both partners aren't experiencing that constant hurly-burly of drama, of aggression, and extreme volatility, then they feel a deep sense of abandonment. And this in turn leads to acting out and self-harming behaviors. It's like trying to console or calm an inconsolable child, because they're in fight or flight mode, and they're locked in for the duration. So as a result, they have decreased levels of empathy, they have heightened aggression, they have defensiveness, they're impulsive, and everything is elevated with no release valve. So the child becomes stuck. Now, child's basic needs, they're not being met. There's no security, no support, so they can't evolve or move past that point in order to grow into a fully functional adult, as the support structures and the sense of safety and security are absent. In this next scene, Janet, she visits her daughter Val and sees the after effects of raised violence. Now, notice the excuses presented in this conversation, how they both deflect, accepting the obvious lies, while both knowing full well that Ray is responsible.
Hello, darling. Honey popped in for a quick cuppa. Getting off my
car. Make sure go. What's she tell you, darling? Good girl.
Oh, my God. What you fucking done? Fucking hell. What's good God, what's the matter with you?
Mama, I got run over.
What do you mean you got run over? Where?
Round by the shops.
Who run you over?
I don't know. It was hit and run, wasn't it?
Well, did no one see it? No one there? No one clocked the number?
No, I don't think so. Look, that's where he hit me there, see? See, with the side of the headlights, right? And then I went smack into the road on my face, and then when I looked up, he'd gone. I mean, it was lucky I didn't have Michelle with me, you know, because he'd have probably have hit her as well.
He'd have fucking killed her, I mean. No one see it, no one mooching about.
No, it was down, you know, down the back, down by the old shops, down there.
Well, weren't you looking?
Yeah, of course I was looking, Mummy. It just seemed to come out of nowhere. And then when I looked up, the fucker had gone.
Fucking lucky, I mean. What's the hospital say? Is the baby all right?
Yeah, you know, they gave it a x-ray scan thing, and, you know, they had a little look, and that is just bruising and that, but...
Now, what's happening in this exchange is they're both constructing a narrative, but they're also testing one another to see if they both will defend the lie and, in their minds, protect the family by sticking to the lie. Because outsiders are seen as the threat, never other family members. And this is something that's never spoken about in regards to domestic violence, and that's the level of complicity between spouses and also between friends and family members. How they all cover for one another and actively protect the abuser. Now, as a result of Ray's violence, Val, she suffers a miscarriage. Excuses are given. The family rally around Val at the hospital, but no one speaks the truth. even when in this next altercation outside the hospital, that it's evident that they all know the truth. For a child witnessing all of this, there can be no trust, no sense of safety, and outsiders are seen as the threat. And their defences, they're up in every interaction, their sense of self-worth is in the gutter. And they're hypervigilant, they're hypersensitive, and every little stressor seems overwhelming. The primary risk factor for any child is that child's parents or caregivers. And we as a society, we enable this by making excuses for the parents' behaviours, by enabling dependency on welfare, by taking away personal accountability, and allowing these abusive relationship patterns to play out time and time again. But it all starts in the home. And if change is to take place, these dynamics need to be addressed, and accountability needs to be taken. But, I mean, I wouldn't hold your breath. As George Orwell once wrote, the further a society drifts from truth, the more it will hate those that speak it. Now, it's not uncommon for children of abusive parents and spouses of abusive partners to defend the abuser and go out of their way to protect them. Now, they feel indebted to that person and they want their approval. And in the case of the child, they depend on that parent for their survival. So the abuse, it's reframed as love. And that somehow they feel they deserve the abuse for failing or disappointing them. In this next scene, Ray reflects back on the day his father died and on their relationship.
Sitting on the bed looking at him, right? He's laid out like that. Mullered. Yeah, he's like he shrunk, you know? He was a big man.
He was a lump.
Yeah, I fucking shouldn't know. I've got enough clumps off the cup. And I touched him, you know? Fucking freezing cold, front of life out of me. I was looking at him, you know. For the first time in my life, I talked to him. I said, "Why didn't you ever love me?"
Ray could only confront his father after his death. Now, how the average person would read this scene is that they would perceive Ray as identifying that his father failed him as a parent and that his father never truly loved him. But from Ray's perspective, he would have a deep sense of shame for, as he sees it, having failed his father. He feels that he tried his best to win his father's approval, but all he got in return was resentment and disapproval. And the violence from his father, he wouldn't construe it as abuse. He would reframe it as tough love or something similar. And if someone asked him, he would probably say he deserved to get hit and it made him into a better man. And this is why Ray drinks. This is why he hurts himself and hurts others, because he's a prisoner of the past. He can't change patterns or behaviours if he can't identify them in the first instance. Just as there can be no forgiveness without understanding. And the word forgiveness, it's a hard pill to swallow for many people, and they see it as letting someone off the hook for their behaviour. But the best way to think about forgiveness is to see it as understanding. Now, understanding that the reason that parent hit you was because that was what they understood love to be, because it was how their parents showed love to them. That was their template. So they were operating from a very narrow, very insular perspective. And once you understand that, that they were limited, that they were impaired, and that they were fallible human beings, just like you or me, you can forgive that. Understanding leads to forgiveness and to change, and ultimately, to freedom from the past. In this next scene, Ray talks with Val, who is now living with her mother after the miscarriage. Now, Ray has destroyed their apartment in a drunken rage, and now he comes seeking forgiveness.
Coming home.
We ain't got a fucking home to go back to, Ray. Everything in that place is fucking smashed. Jesus, I mean, I feel like you really must hate me.
I don't hate you.
Well, I don't feel loved. I mean, that ain't love. I mean, can't you see what the mess we're in? You're not noticed what we're like. I mean, we don't talk anymore. I mean, if you go out, just get in, Mum, will ya? Just get in, I'm dealing with it. I mean, when you go out with your mates. And then when you are indoors, you're pissed out of your brains asleep in front of the fucking television. I'll turn the television off, go up to bed, you follow me up at 3 o'clock in the morning stinking of booze. That's what I get. Either that or you're knocking me about. Well, I'm 30 today, you know, and I feel so fucking old. You know, I'm so tired. You know, and I want to be able to look back and say, yeah, I had a bit of fun, you know, when I'm old, instead of saying everyone fucking felt sorry for me. When that's the life I've got. Do you hear what I'm saying? I just don't want it.
Now notice there's no admission of culpability on Ray's part, even after all he's done. He just stands silently. Yeah, everything in his mind has just been compartmentalized, just swept to one side in his mind. Yeah, he truly feels that he loves Val. And in this moment, he believes he's doing the honorable thing, and that he needs to win back her love because he feels he's nothing without her. And his need to be with her, it's a desperate attempt to fill a void. And without her in his life, the demons, they come home to roost. And at this point, there would be a sea change in his behavior. He would now be the doting husband, working hard for his family, by being a dedicated criminal, but working hard nonetheless. And he would attempt to do everything he can to make her happy. Then you could set your watch to it. She would come back, and the cycle begins anew. And it would be nice to think that Val now turns a new page in her life, that she leaves Ray and finds someone who will love her unconditionally. But we know that the pattern will just play out the same. If not with Ray, then with the next partner. You know, it's like ripping open old wounds time and time again, never allowing the body the chance to heal and repair itself. Because the majority of people, they run on autopilot, you know, never taking the opportunity to see things from another's perspective. And this is especially true with abusive parents. You know, they act out. They never take time to explain to the child why, or to explain what they felt at the time or what precipitated it. Now, if they did, it would allow that child to make sense of that experience. You know, it would foster trust between parent and child, and it would show them the power of words and the importance of expressing themselves verbally and identifying things instead of lashing out violently. In this next scene, Ray, Val, Janet, and the rest of the family, all together, they're about to visit Billy in jail, who's just been locked up due to drug offences and for other charges. Well, Janet, she says that Billy has recently been attacked in jail over a woman. Over a woman who has claimed Billy is the father of her child. Now, watch the exchanges in this scene, because it's strongly inferred that Ray knows this young woman and that Val suspects. And you can also see the dynamics of the family at play in this scene. How they bond over very dark humour and over Billy's situation.
Well, you ain't the only one I've had it off with or something, and she's pulled Billy's name out the act.
Lovely.
Because he's known her for years, hasn't he, that Lisa? So this bloke's got the right fucking hump, thinking like Billy's been giving her one. I mean, he's got nothing to lose. He's banged up for another 9 years. It's nothing for him to kill someone, is it? So he's done Billy on the exercise yard for the thing with the bird, not the thing with Danny. It's got nothing to do with that. It's over the other thing. So he's done him with a knife, a Stanley knife, right? Now, what amazes me is how they get the fucking things in there in the first place. I mean, what's the geezer doing with a knife in the neck?
No. It was a moody thing, Mum. You know, it was like a toothbrush with a couple of them big razor blades band round it, see? So that's why Billy now is in the Fraggle Wing, you know, with all the weirdos.
No.
See, he's been segregated for protection, hasn't he? He's in there with all the nonsense and the rapists and that. You know what I mean? Poor sod.
Mind your bits.
Now, we see here the codependency and dynamics of the family. You know, life goes on. Behaviour is excused and swept under the carpet. The same cycles repeat. An ancient philosopher once wrote that dogs bark at what they don't understand. He was right. A man can scream into the void, or he can seek to understand it. And in that understanding comes freedom.
Start to cry.
When?
When I see him.